a real deal. I'll shoot your liver out and hand it to you.
Hey everyone. So this is going to be a little bit unique. Unique might not be the best way of putting it. Demetrius, myself, Mike Howerton, and a special guest, sometimes a few special guests, and Rob, of course, are going to be doing a live Facebook every single Tuesday now in replacement of the normal Tuesday show that we have. Sometimes it gets released on Tuesday. I say Tuesday because we normally record on a Tuesday, but it doesn't always get released on a Tuesday. But really, we're going to try to do this live from now on, and we're going to do it live to the Cue It Up Network page. Of course, we're still going to put it together and release it as a normal episode as well, because you know people work during the day that are not able to listen or to watch. And we just want to make sure that you guys can still be able to hear the normal Tuesday show. But basically, that show that we discuss everything that's going on in the world of pool, both in the past and coming up, is now going to be done live. So most of these are going to have, or I should say most of these intros are going to have just me kind of talking like this, where I'm doing this well after we did the Facebook Live. And this is basically going to be for the announcements in the beginning. So we'll no longer do those during the Facebook Live. We will only be talking pool on that. So today, as you'll find out, we had Demetrius, myself, Mike Howerton, and Carl Boyce, the famed Moscone Cup vice captain, as well as world champion 8-ball player, lots of other things, lots of other accolades. You probably know him as the commentator or the vice captain for the Team Europe. If you're new to the game and if you're a little bit older, you'll remember his playing career. He hasn't really played too much since about 2013 to 2014 is kind of when he hung his cues up for good. But he is a very, very respected voice in the industry, and we are absolutely ecstatic to be able to add him to the Cue It Up podcast team semi-frequently going forward, I believe. I think that's kind of the intention he has, is to kind of join us maybe every week, and maybe once every 2 weeks, or once a month at least, certainly. So that is the plan going forward. We are going to be doing these live, so all of these announcements like this are going to be done in the beginning just by me. I will get them all out of the way, and then we will start into, I guess, the interview on Facebook. So without further ado, let me get the announcements out of the way in the beginning. We did the fundraiser for Jeanette Lee, where we basically just gave 100% of the profits that we got in all week long for the apparel. And because of that, we were able to raise about $250. I don't have the exact numbers in front of me yet. I probably should have got those before doing this, but I wanted to get this out before leaving for Pool League tonight. So that's why I don't have the exact numbers in front of me. But I think it was right around $250. I am going to throw a $50 donation just out of my pocket on top of that so that we could get up to a $300 donation in the name of Cue It Up Network. Pretty exciting stuff. I mean, of course, Jeanette Lee was such a pivotal person in this industry for so long, and it seems like the least that we can do to try to get her the help that her and her family are going to need. Hopefully, with her being involved in it, of course, stage 4 ovarian cancer is a very, very scary thing, but she is a fighter, and I'm not betting against her. So that's announcement number one. Pretty exciting stuff. Announcement number two, we have got new patches. Now, anybody who's had one of the patches in the past, you know that they were not the stick-on type, and that was the biggest criticism that I had gotten from the patches. I wanted to not do the stick-on ones, just because I don't think they stick as well as the heat-on ones. But I guess I own an iron, and apparently I am one of about 7 people in the entire country who own an iron. So I actually heard stories of people. I literally had somebody go down the street and rent a $50 hotel just so that he could get access to the iron in the room, so that he could put his patch on on his case, which is pretty exciting stuff. He actually got a room and used the iron because he didn't have one and didn't know anybody in his entire life that had one. So that was his solution. Interesting stuff. You will not have to worry about that going forward because we have the stick-on ones. Hopefully they stick on well. I know I've never really had great luck with these things in the past. It seems like when you pull them out of your car or you put them in your car, they just eventually they just kind of start rubbing off. And after about 6 to 12 months, they end up peeling off. But I'm hoping for the best. They're really high quality. They're really, really nice patches. I can't say where I got them done because they don't really want to do these because there's not a lot of profit margins in them. So I'm going to keep that one under wraps where I got these done at. But I have a bunch of them. I got about 300. So if you would like a patch, please reach out to the podcast. They are going to be $5, which includes shipping. And that is basically kind of the going rate for patches, I guess, in the industry today. Other than that, I guess that's really all the announcements I have in the beginning. We're going to cease to do the shout-outs. I don't think there's going to be too many people that are really upset with that. I know the shout-outs are just kind of as a thank you for the people who, you know, whether they partook in the podcast or did something for us or, you know, whatever it was. We tried to give the shout-outs to the people who were around the podcast or did something to help us or, you know, did whatever it was. We wanted to give a shout out to you guys and make you guys feel special and part of the actual community that we're trying to build here. So if that's really a if that's something you guys want to see stick around, we could we certainly could do that on the Facebook Live side of things as well. So if that's something you do not want to see go away, let me know and we can build it back in. But if we don't hear from anybody, we are going to be probably excluding that from the podcast going forward. And one last thing before we actually get 100% into the podcast from here, please, 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 if you listen via iTunes, please go over to iTunes and actually leave a review and a rating, please. It actually is a big deal. I always knew it was kind of a big deal, but there are actually some things I've been reading lately that basically it is incredibly powerful. The algorithm that Apple has set up with their podcasts, where it's like significantly more likely that you'll show up in somebody else's feed on Apple if you have a large amount of ratings and reviews. So please, please, please take a second, pause the podcast right now, head over there and do that if you listen on Apple iTunes. If you don't and you still have the iTunes podcast app, maybe you can still head over and do it even if you listen through Spotify or Stitcher or whatever you listen through. If you have an Apple device, it would still be very appreciated if you were able to go over there and do that. It actually does make a pretty big deal. So it would be awesome if you guys can do that. Plus, we always read the people who make reviews on there, whether they're good or whether they're bad. We always read them. So I do have one additional one. I don't know who this is from, but it's just a very simple one. So I will read it off really quickly here. And it is from ACID47. Listen to the podcast, all you pool players. Pretty simple stuff, but it's a 5-star rating, and we really appreciate that. So thank you very much for doing that, and everybody else who will take the time to go over and do it, we really appreciate it from you as well. All right, without further ado, here is the show. So we can figure we take just a second or two just to let the people get in here. So, Carl, are you at the Championship League already? Or I mean, it's not exactly starting yet, but you're not down there yet for it?
No. 22nd, all right? I'll probably go the 21st, the day before.
Gotcha. Yeah, it's got to be pretty close to you, yeah?
It's not that close. I want to say it's about a 3-hour drive. I suppose that's close for you guys. You would say that's close, but here we feel like that's like torture.
Yeah, and the U.S. is just so like massive that 3 hours is like, I mean, that's not a normal drive. It's not something you're going to make every week, but it's not uncommon to have like 2 or 3 3-hour drives a year, I would say, at least minimum.
Yeah, I don't mind it because we're still on lockdown here, so it's like, just get me out of here.
Yeah,
just get me out of the house.
Do you guys have an end in sight for that? There's
Well, my children just went back to school yesterday, they've been off since October, so there is plans moving forward. And I think they're flying through the vaccines in England. I think we've got like nearly a quarter of people vaccinated. So I don't know. It's just originally I was like watching every news channel and following it, and then it's gone on that long. I've kind of like just when my friends tell me we can go out, I'll be there basically. Right.
Yeah, it looks like you had a nice COVID stubble starting up for you again.
No, I can't grow a beard, mate, at all. Nearly 40, and I can't grow a beard.
Well, I'm nearly 30, and this is about the best I can do, so I'm in the same boat with you. It's a hard life for us, you know?
Demetrius is flying the flag with a beard.
Yeah, I can't grow a black beard, though. I'll tell you that, it's all... The colors are all wrong now. I don't understand what happened.
It's growing in the wrong place and all.
Well, so everybody who's tuning in, we are going to be doing a live Facebook. Of course, we do our regular podcast right around a Tuesday. And we're thinking about trying to do more of a live version of it so that our regular weekly update podcasts are going to be, I guess, in real time on Facebook right here. Carl said that he would join for every now and then. So welcome, Carl. Of course, you're not a regular person on the podcast, but you might be a little bit more going forward.
Yeah, I'll jump on and talk some smack, no problem.
Well, you're one of the best at that, pal. You're quite talented when it comes to talking smack, aren't you?
I'd like to think I'm in the top one.
Yeah, probably. And then, of course, we're doing the here. We got Mike Howerton. So, Mike of AZ Billiards.
Hey.
I feel like I'm. What's that family show? Why can't I think? Why am I?
Brady blanking? Bunch.
Yeah, the Brady Bunch. I got the Brady Bunch. I got Carl down here, and I got Mike Howerton right here, and I got Demetrius Gelatis. Demetrius, how's it going?
Fantastic. How about yourself?
Living the dream. All right, so we're here. We are going to get started talking about all things that are pool related. So if you're out there tuning in, please give this a share. Help us get out there to your local pool groups, your personal page, all that good stuff. Help us spread this weekly live podcast that we are going to start doing. So let's get started. I guess chronologically, the biggest thing that we get to look forward to is starting on Thursday. That is going to be between Fedor Gorst and Dodong Diamond, and that is going to be kind of a unique format, actually. It's a pretty fun format. Carl, have you had the opportunity to see this one yet?
I won't lie, I haven't. I've heard that the match is going ahead, so fill me in. What's the rules and regulations, pal?
We got you. So it's a four-day event. It's going to be played starting Thursday, and then, of course, going Friday, Saturday into Sunday. And what the event basically is each day is going to be a new discipline. So day one is going to be 10 ball. Day two is going to be 9 ball. Day three is going to be 8 ball. And day four is going to be 1 pocket. The nine ball in day one is a race to 30. 10 ball race day two is a race to 25. 8 ball day three is a race to 25. And 1 pocket is a race to 10. So this is, again, between Fedor Gorst and Dodong Diamond. What's your initial thoughts on the match?
Demetrius, go ahead.
Well, we talked about this a little bit last week, so I think I'm just going to stick with my read. I'm a big, big, big Aranis fan. He's one of my favorites. But I just think Fedor is not only maybe the top talent on the planet right now, but he's also hitting his gear where he's just peeking out. He's you know, very confident, very hungry. And when you take a guy with that amount of talent and that amount of hunger and confidence, and you put it all together, I just would want to stay out of his way. And I think he wins the 9 ball. I think he wins the 10 ball. I think he could win the 8 ball. And I think the 1 pocket, you know, obviously could go either way. Maybe Aranis has the edge. I don't know. But of course, Aranis can win any of those three sets. But I think that he's the underdog in all three sets. And I think 10 ball with the break is going to be the most dominant. Federer is going to be the most dominant. 9 ball with the way that the break, I think Aranis is most live in the 1 pocket. 9 ball would be next because of the unpredictability of the cut break with a 9 on the spot. I think with 8 ball, I know that, you know, the Philippines play great 8 ball, but I think Fedor plays straight ball. I think he could make this a runaway train, 4.5-inch pocket. So I'm betting on Fedor on the 10 ball and the 8 ball. I think he's got a good edge in the 9 ball. And that's it.
Yeah. Carl, do you want to go next?
Well, I've got to back my man, Anna, you know, Team Europe, so regardless. But what happens if he goes 2-2?
I guess that's it. I'm assuming there's no gamble on each of these days, so I don't know exactly what it is. I suppose I could reach out to Roy, and maybe I'll do that right now and see if he's willing to give up the details on that. But I think that's just somewhere between a serious gamble and a exhibition match. I know that Fedor's going to be around the U.S. for quite a while yet still, so I don't think this is like a last tour. But, yeah, I mean, it could go 2-2. Is that what you think might happen?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I don't know really who's got the edge in the one pocket. It's not something I'm familiar with, the one pocket, I won't lie. It's always kind of interested me a little bit, but, you know, living in England, no one, you know, really plays it or knows what it is. But I understand why the players like it when they're playing. It's, you know, it's a game where you feel like you've got a lot of control and you play a lot of shots and there's less luck factor. But kind of agree with Demetrius. I think, you know, Fedor with the 9 ball, the break and the 10 ball. Don't know what kind of 8 ball he plays, though. I think that's going to be an interesting set out the four. So, you know, I'm not saying I'm going to watch all 4 days, but I think the 8 ball, you know, with my background as an 8 ball player, I'm just interested to see how the guys play patterns. So I think I'll sweat that one out of the four.
Mo Bashir, I didn't know that really Fedor plays much 8 ball, but Mo Bashir reached out to me after we talked about it a little bit last week and said that Fedor plays really strong 8 ball. And that's he's actually going to be a huge favorite there. I didn't know that, but thanks, Mo, for filling us in. So I still think it's 2-2. I think that I give the small edge to Fedor in the 9 ball. But I think that, I give Fedor the small nod in 9 ball. I give him a huge edge in 10 ball and 8 ball. But I give James Aranis a huge edge in the one pocket. And I just think that I'm making a prediction. I think Aranis will pull out the 9 ball. I think it'll be fun. I would love to see it go 2-2, and maybe they play an exhibition, maybe a race to 125 or 250 in straight pull. I think would be a lot of fun to watch, although I think that favors, I have to assume it favors Fedor quite a bit, but I think it'd be a lot of fun to see that. What do you think, Mike, on the match?
Well, the match itself, I mean, certainly the rotation games would have to favor Fedor. I'm thinking it's probably 3-1. Fedor probably wins the 8 ball. You know, when we talk about this, though, it makes me curious, and I'm really glad that Carl's here. Carl, what is your experience in the differences between the Europeans who just make everything? You know, if there's an open shot, they make it. And the Filipinos who are more grinded out, long run action, you know, they're favored in that sort of thing. I mean, is that something that you guys see over there?
I think the sort of Europeans, certainly the Brits, I think fundamentally we're a lot more stronger in the sense of we're more compact and we're more consistent. If you look at a lot of the Filipinos, there's not a lot of them who you would say have got really good cue actions. But, you know, for American pool, the pockets are a little bit more generous than, let's say, you know, snooker and English 8 ball tables, what the likes of me and Chris and Darren grew up playing. Obviously, I'm guessing Fedor's probably played the old Russian pyramids where it looks like there's no pocket on the table at all. And fundamentally, Fedor looks like, you know, he would be pretty handy with a snooker cue as well, very compact and cues off his chest. But I think the Filipinos, you know, I'm sure we've all seen these matches floating around social media over the years where, you know, Efren's been playing somebody, whether it be in an exhibition match or some kind of cash game, and, you know, the table looks like it's in a shed somewhere. And I think they've just grown up playing pool anywhere and in all kind of conditions. And We've probably just played him a little bit more professional sort of events, so you treat it a bit more as a profession type thing. But, you know, one thing the Filipinos do have is the knowledge of the game and the flair, and they have all the shots. And I think that's just it, really, mate.
I was watching a stream with the Wonder Boy, if I can jump in real quick, with, of course, he's playing out of the Philippines, and he's literally playing outside, and at about halfway through his match, a chicken jumped up on the edge of the banner in the back, and it's just like sitting there, just flapping its wings like this in the background, and it was being chased by a cat. So there's like a cat chasing a chicken around.
Yeah, I mean, when we used to go to the Philippines and play in some of the events, we went to a club called One Side, and whenever there was a big sort of international event, you know, in the Philippines, all the pool players would congregate to One Side, and I think it had like 8 tables. It wasn't a massive club, but everyone used to go in there, and every table there'd be some kind of big action game. And it was just weird because I remember playing a match and all these Filipinos would be around the table and I couldn't even queue. And I'm thinking, and I sort of looked at it as it was quite rude what they was doing, but it wasn't rude. It was just what they did. But because I'm used to like an arena and space, and I'm thinking like, any chance of getting out of my way so I could cue the shot, you know what I mean? But yeah, it's just, you know, that's what makes pool so fun. Everyone's got, you know, different backgrounds, and, you know, it's played all over the world.
Nate, I'd like to jump in on that one too, if you said all right. The Europe versus Philippines.
Go ahead.
What I think is, you know, it's almost like with one pocket, where in one pocket you've got the moving game, you know, the knowledge and the experience, the game management, and then you've got the execution, the striking, the, you know, all that firepower. And in the old days, there was a lot of knowledge that was hard to obtain, and so the people that had a knowledge edge really had a big edge. And there was people that were lower level players that had the knowledge that could really still dominate the game. Nowadays, because the knowledge is so common and it's so visible, it's kind of gone the other way. And now you've got to bet on the strikers. You know, your Josh Filler is going to beat Tony Chohan, because there's not that big knowledge gap anymore. The same way, I think that it used to be that same way with gambling versus tournaments. There were tournament players that were, you know, had a very, very high pool skills. But the gamblers, you know, the Filipinos had these long, you know, the gambling and the heart and the experience of the long matches. And that was a big enough edge in terms of, you know, just a psychological outlook towards competition and experience, to where even if they were a little, you know, I'm not going to say gobbledygook, but even if their fundamentals were a little wacky and flip strokes and weird, you know, like the boosties and the efferents had such a big edge just because of their experience, their knowledge, and their heart. Now, though, I feel like that gap is closing the same way. And when you look at, you know, the top European champions, how many champions has the Philippines put out compared to Europe in the last 20 years? I mean, Aranas is great, but he is not Fedor. He's not Filler. He's not, you know, Clint Ikachi. Maybe he's right there. But the point is that I can go to Europe and point out an army of people that are like Aranas, and some that are even stronger and top tier. And you have to go back 20 years. You know, I mean, Dennis Rocolo is still at the top, but he was from 20 years ago.
Dennis and Carlo Beato.
Yeah, and so the bottom line is, I feel like they're competitive. You know, what makes them tough as competitors, that gap is closed, and Europe can compete just as hard. And you look at Filler, and you look at Shaw, and you look at, you know, all these guys that can compete just as hard. So now I feel like that gap isn't there. It's going to come down to who's got, like Carl said, the fundamentals, who's got the striking, and who's just more robust. And I just feel that Europe plays the best patterns, and they're both solid fundamentally and in terms of patterns and strategy. And there's just not any kind of edge to be had on Europe anymore to where you can get away with anything.
Yeah. I pretty much agree with all that. Is there anybody else want to, I guess, finish up with anything before we move on?
Well, and I'd like to run with what Demetrius brought up, though. You know, you're involved with this thing with Wonder Boy, and you know, there's these big matches over there in the Philippines, and we're seeing more up and coming younger players. I mean, what does that next group of Filipino players look like? I mean, are they going to further what we saw with Bustamante and Efren and Dennis? Or is it like Demetrius says, and the whole thing is just moved to Europe?
Well, Carl, that might be a good question for you.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you've obviously... It depends on the travel, doesn't it, as well? I mean, you know, it's a bit like the Americans. It was at once upon a time, it was only really Shane travelling overseas to all the events, you know, and, you know, obviously you've got Jeffrey DeLuna. He does a lot of travelling, doesn't he? He's floating around. There's Anton Raga. He's a class player. But Europeans go to all the events, don't they? We're a bit more schooled in going to world championships and grinding out there, even though prize money might not have been fantastic. And, you know, we've played Euro tours where the prize money's not fantastic, but there's 150 machines there and anyone can beat anyone on the day. And I don't know, I just feel like sort of the Americans and the Filipinos, they're just maybe not quite as, they don't really travel as much to the big major events. Maybe that's because it's lacking some more major events. I don't know, but there's certainly always going to be class pool players coming out of Philippines. I mean, the guy who cleans the pool room or, you know, the taxi driver, they all play over there. You know what I mean? So they're not going to be short of talent, that's for sure.
Yeah. I heard. Go ahead, Demetrius.
Oh, yeah, I was just going to say, I agree. You know, like the same thing that worked for Europe in terms of all the knowledge being out there. And then, and they're closing the competition gap. I think that, you know, it could work for the Philippines, you know, if they take advantage and say, okay, so Europe, I think Europe's mapped out a formula to get to a world championship. I mean, I'm not saying pool solved, but they're getting the formula of delivering a world champion. I think Johan was quoted as saying, give me a room full of 12-year-old kids, give me 10 12-year-old kids, and in 10 years, I'll have a world champion. And it's like, okay, really, really rock solid fundamentally, tremendous amounts of practice in a disciplined, organized way where you're really maxing out your skills. And then like Carl's saying, getting in the ring at the high levels early and staying there and sparring against other players in competition around the globe internationally. And it's like, that's the road. And so if the Filipinos look at that and say, hey, that's the road to get to the top. And yeah, we've got talent and we can play these money games and build a competitive experience. But we also have to look at what are the things they're training on in Russia? What are the things that they're, you know, what are they getting on those tours in Europe? And if they follow that path, they could follow that path. But I think that is the path to the top right now. So if they take advantage of the fact that path has been publicized, they could follow it. But I think Europe is the one that's kind of beaten that path and is currently racing down it.
Yeah, I think you could make a pretty serious argument that, I mean, in fact, I would make an argument that four of the top six players are at least European, and that's Joshua Filler, Fedor Gorst, Eklanti Kachi right now, and probably Jason Shaw. I think it's four of the, I mean, you could throw maybe Dennis in there still, maybe Shane in there still, and of course, that's a little unfair to some of the Asian players, because the last time we saw Chang Jung Lin play, I guess he was running out from everywhere, and we only get to see Wu Cha-ching play once a year, and he's usually winning a U.S. Open or getting into the top four. So, of course, it's that's a little bit of biasy towards the Asian players, but, I mean, the Europeans are, they're there.
And when you look at the top 100, it's even more lopsided. You know what I mean? That's where it really shows. It's the top 200. Yeah, they're so deep.
Yeah. All right. Well, why don't we move on to this and let's talk about the Championship League pool that's starting up. It's not starting until the 22nd, and it will run all the way until the 29th. But most of the player announcements have been made on Facebook. Of course, the entire roster is already up online, and you can see it at matchroompool.com if you wanted to go check it out. If you want to just get the drip, drip, drip of the excitement announcements, of course, you can just hang out at Matchroom Pools page. But let's talk originally about the format. So the format is basically, I guess essentially it's a knockoff of the Snooker Championship. It's basically the same from start to finish. You start with seven pool players, and the bottom one is eliminated from the event. The top one moves on to the winning bracket, which will be at the eighth day of the event. I guess the first group is Elbin Ocean, Chris Melling, Chris Robinson, Eklanti Kachi, Joshua Filler, Kelly Fisher, and Niels Fein. So I guess let's talk a little bit about the first group. Actually, Carl, I have a question for you right away. Do you know how this was actually determined? Was this a random draw, or was this kind of a little random with a little bit of placing? What do you know about it?
I think obviously we know players have you know, pulled out for whatever reasons, and I think it's just been a case of pick the group and get it started. You know, at the end of the day, we don't have a big fancy tour and rankings, so I don't think there's any set criteria that we should follow. I think, you know, Matchroom Pool, Matchroom Sport, and, you know, Emily and the gang, they can pretty much do what they want in my eyes, because there's nothing really going on. I think for the first event, at the end of the day, you know, just get the guys in and the girls, get them and playing, get loads of pool, get it out there, get people watching, talking about it. And then in the next event, the next league, then maybe we can have some kind of formula, or certainly after this year, because, you know, Matchroom, you know, we need them to get more events at the end of the day, because they're the guys who are going to put up the money and make it professional and, you know, get the guys playing under serious heat, because, you know, pool's a great sport when the pressure's on and the TV cameras are on. And you know, I've seen a lot of people talking about things on social media, you know, about, you know, as you've just said there, who's in, what's in, you know, you're going to be a bit more favourable if you play in one of the early groups. But as things unfold, and maybe one day we'll have a proper ranking system, it will all make sense.
Yeah. So I guess let's take a look at the first one. We have, like I said, we have Albin Ocean, Chris Mellon, Chris Robinson, Eklanti Kachi, Joshua Filler, Kelly Fisher, Niels Fine. So the bottom player gets eliminated, the top player moves on, but the way that this form, well, I guess the way that this event is kind of put up, it's you're almost better off, you know, if, maybe if you're like a Joshua Filler or an Eklanti Kachi, you know, a top player, you're almost better not losing, but like not getting out of the bracket right away, because once you get out of your bracket, you get $4,000 right then and there. But if you get second, for example, you get $2,000. If you get third, fourth, you get $1,250. Fifth place gets $900. Sixth place gets $700. And seventh place gets zero. So basically, as long as you continue moving on and you don't become that seventh place finisher who gets eliminated from the pools, you will make more money. So if you get second, theoretically, six times in a row, or even seven times in a row, you will make $14,000. There's a pretty good chance you're going to make more than the winner of the event. It's an interesting format as far as that. Carl, I want to direct this question towards you. Think back to, you know, when you were playing your top pool. Is that something you think you would try to do potentially, or are you just trying to get into that final group and just get your money there?
Yeah, I'm just trying to qualify, and I'll see you on finals day, mate. I'm not taking any risks for nothing. I'm not about that life. I'm just get me through the group and see you later.
Yeah, for the winners.
But I know what you're saying.
I can guarantee you, if you had a group.
Go on.
I was just going to say, if you had a group 10 years ago of American players and you put them in this format, they would spend 2 hours in a conference figuring out who was going to win, who was going to take second.
Listen, no, none of them European guys even are on that same thought process. They're just like, get me into that final group and I'll see you later. Because, you know, at the end of the day, freaking hell, even if you're going to start fixing groups and all this, what are you going to get out of it at the end of the year really anyway? A few more dollars? It's like just...
couple, you know, peanuts.
Yeah, you've got your logos. Just get in the event. You know, it's, you know, everyone can see and keep your sponsors happy and win the event. But I know what you mean. You know, theoretically, you can make more money, but it just seems like too much hard work.
Yeah. Well, I guess there's seven qualifiers, right? So theoretically, you could get second as long as you were in the first group. You could get second six times in a row. That nets you $12,000, and then you win your final group. That nets you another $4,000, so you're at $6,000. You win the event, you could win up to $21,000.
Well, I'll be in the comms box, pal, and when it gets near the end of the groups, I'll be seeing who looks like they're throwing a few dodgy shots. I'll be letting everybody know if that happens. But
Carl,
I don't see it. Yeah, I don't see it. You know, end of day, the players that are in the event, you know, it's a Matchroom Sport event. This is not some like shady pool room gambling match where, you know, things a little dodgy go on. This is, you know, for the world to see. And I just don't see things like that happening. And especially with, you know, you mentioned the names in the first group. I just don't see any of them players, you know, getting up to no good. I don't see it. But I'm just looking forward to seeing loads of race to fives, and, you know, it'll snowball very quick and the match will be gone and there'll be loads of talking points, loads of dramas. And I'm kind of hoping the ladies in the event beat up on some of the guys a little bit. I think that'll be kind of cool.
Well, that is we'll start with Group One. Let's chat a little bit about Group One. Who do we think the favorites are? Who do we think the favorites are to get out? Who do we think the favorites are to get eliminated?
Why don't we all pick a winner and pick a loser in Group One?
All right, Demetrius, you are chronologically top left as far as the Brady Bunch goes. If I could figure out how to use my thumb, why don't you start us?
Yeah, and just a quick take on with this. I've played a couple round robins in the past in the U.S., and we've had some, like Mike said, we've had some dicey results in some of the events I've played. I like the fact that Matchroom has set it up to where they're paying out six spots so that everyone's got an incentive, even if they can't advance that round. But I agree with Carl, you're not going to see any shenanigans. The problem is you shouldn't set it up to where there's a financial incentive for shenanigans and then count on integrity. I think the tournament director should set it up to where there's no opportunity for it. Yes, we have good players. I trust them, but I don't think that you should make rules and hope people are honest. I think you need to set it up to where it's kind of foolproof. So I'd like to see him improve on that in the future, but yeah, I don't expect anything. I just hope that there's no accusations of stuff. It seems like people, I'm on AZ Billiards a lot, and people are very quick to get very suspicious. Somebody misses a ball and everyone's like, oh, what's going on? It's like, man, it's brutal. So, okay. That said, I'm going to go ahead and pick Elbin. I was really torn, Elbin and Clenty. It's really, 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 really tough. But I'm going to pick Elbin to advance. Short sets. I just think that he's the quickest out of the gate and the most consistent set after set in short set formats. I'll pick my man Elbin. And then to get eliminated, I'm sorry, can you run through the list one more time? I want to at least make it look like I'm thinking so I don't hurt anyone's feelings.
Albin Ocean, Chris Melling, Chris Robinson, Eklanti Kati, Joshua Filler, Kelly Fisher, and Niels Fine.
I mean, listen, I love the U.S., and I have a lot of respect for Chris, but I think that it's going to be very hard for him against that field to advance. Not definitely live, you know, but you got to pick somebody, right?
Yeah. So chronologically, I guess I'm now here, so I'm top right, so I will go next. I know Chris Melling just actually won a pretty big event this past weekend, right,
Carl? Last night it was. Yeah, English 8-ball event.
Yeah, and that was a big event, right?
Like that. Yeah, in the world of English 8-ball, you know, it's no secret myself, Chris, and Darren Appleton grew up playing this game. It's the same size as a bar table, but rounded pockets. I don't want to go into all what it is, but, you know, English 8-ball's always struggled for tournaments, but some guys have set up this new kind of fast, fun event. And, yeah, he won it last night. It was like $15,000 to the winner or something.
So, I mean, Chris Melling might be a dark horse in this pool. Of course, Chris Melling is not by any stretch helpless against anybody he's playing against. He's not one of those top guys. He's not like a Clenty or Joshua Filler or Jason Shaw. But, you know, he's that next tier of player, and he would be my dark horse out of this group. I think that it wouldn't surprise.
So you're picking Chris.
I'm not picking Chris, but I'm saying I'm looking out for him.
We just need a name, pal. Come on.
my pick is going to be Eklanti. I think that he's got that swagger to him. He hasn't quite performed as well as he probably could have in a couple of the Matchroom events, but I just like him as a player. I like him as I like his fundamentals. I like his fearlessness at the table, and I like Eklanti to get out of the first group. Who's going to get eliminated? That's a really tough one. I think I got to go with Chris Robinson as well. But the last time we did see Niels Fine, and Niels, I love Niels. He is like the consummate professional. He's exactly what this game needs, representing it at all stages. But last time we saw Niels, he was not performing very well at the Moscone Cup. Granted, that's an entirely different beast. But the last time that we saw Niels on a Matchroom table, he was not doing his best. So that could be. I kind of have a dark horse for winning it. I kind of have a dark horse for potentially could get eliminated as a big upset in the first round. So Carl, you want to go next?
Yeah, I'm gonna say Joshua Filler wins the group. Obviously, You know, he needs no introduction. I don't need to harp on about Joshua's game. And I think to be eliminated, well, I can't. I don't want to pick Chris because you two guys are picking on him. So even though I half get why you've picked him, I understand it. But and I want to see the women do well. But I've got to pick somebody, and I'm going to say I think Kelly Fisher gets eliminated in the first group.
My heart.
But I do want the women to do well, so it's a bit of a strange pick. So if yous hadn't have picked Chris Robinson, I would have done. But because you've both picked Chris, I'm not going to pick Chris, so I'm going to say Kelly.
What do you think, Mike?
I got to go with Carl here. I think Filler's going to be the player to beat. Albin and Eklund, I mean, I see them getting out of the... I see them getting out of the group stages eventually. I mean, you know, look, all the players who were in this first group have a big advantage because they're going to get opportunity after opportunity to win a group. I think Filler probably wins the first one. And, you know, I really want to be different, but I just have to use logic. I just don't see Chris Robinson getting out of this first group.
Well, Chris...
Chris, if you're watching, all the Americans... I've dumped you out of the tournament, and the Englishman has got £5. Just remember that.
But you know what though. Just to be fair, it's like we're not. And of course, everyone's joking. But you know, it does sound like we're picking on him. But we're really just going off of ability, resume, track record. And so when listen, in 5 years, when Chris has popped off a few majors, then we'll be picking him to go on. It's just one of those things you got to earn, and he's out there earning it. So he's doing everything he could do, which is out there earning it.
Correct.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the rest of this, you got Albin Ocean, who is a world champion. You got Eklanti Kaci, who was a previous number one in the world. You got Joshua Filler, a world champion. You got Kelly Fisher, a 12-time women's champion. You got Niels Fine. What title hasn't that guy won? Chris Melling. I don't know exactly. I guess what are his big titles if you had to give him a resume, Carl? I don't know any of his huge events.
In nine ball, he won the China Open a few years ago. Obviously, he's played in the Moscone Cup twice. I think he's won a Euro Tour, but he's not quite done it on the big events like the World Nine Ball Championships. He's not gone deep. US Open, he's not gone deep. The problem with Chris is what I see with Chris is he still plays some English eight ball. He plays a little bit of nine ball. He plays a little bit of snooker. You can't play all three Q sports and expect to, beat Ronnie O'Sullivan and Joshua Filler, and you're going to get found out. It's short races. He's going to win matches. There's no doubt about it. But for me, the consistency is just not going to be there over the likes of Joshua and Albin and Kaci. So he's going to win matches. Will he qualify in one of the groups? I'm not so sure.
All right. So we won't go through all this and obviously give our picks all the way through. But what I will say is the second group. So one player will be eliminated. One player will move on to the finals. David Alkaidi and Miensko Forchunski is going to be joining into that. One discussion I think we could have is not who do we think is going to win, but do we think that the players coming in have a realistic chance of making the winners group? Of course, for not making the original, I would say that these two obviously have the best chance because they're going to get potentially six bites at the apple. And I guess I can start this one since Dimitri started the last one. I would say Miensko, absolutely. I think Miensko was playing some really, really good pool. He played, of course, in my VG10 2.0 event. And made it all the way to the semifinals. I think he can make it. David, I haven't seen him play a lot of pool really since the lockdown. I've seen him play in a decent amount of virtual events, and he hasn't made a huge splash in any of those. So I would say I don't foresee David Alkaidi having a realistic chance of making the finals, but I could see Miensko making it. Carl, what do you think?
I think it's the opposite way around. I think... David Alkaidi has got matchroom arena experience. He's a two-time World Pool Masters champion. He's played for Team Europe and he's represented Spain numerous times for the World Cup of Pool. And being involved with matchroom and played in all their events, they're going to set the arena up, not Moscone style, of course, but it's going to feel very matchroom-esque, very, it'll be a good arena. And I think Fortunski, I just think he's still at the learning stage, and he's not done enough in them type of events for my liking just yet. So I think it's the opposite way around.
Mike, what do you think?
Yeah, I'm with Carl again here. This is just getting to become monotonous. Yeah, I don't think Fortunski has got the experience that is going to get him there, but I think Al-Kaidi definitely makes the final group. I mean, if you go back and look at the first group of players, you got to figure Albin, you know, he's going to have theoretically seven opportunities. Albin makes it in, Kachi makes it in, Filler makes it in. I don't know about the rest of that, you know, of that group as to who I would think makes it into the final seven, but as many opportunities as Al-Kaidi is going to have coming in on day two and seeing players like Albin and Eklund eliminated, he's going to be at the top of the food chain there pretty soon. Because, I mean, even after that, I don't see players coming in on subsequent days that I think are going to challenge someone like Al-Kaidi.
Okay. Demetrius, what do you think?
Yeah, I actually, it sounds really good, and I'm nodding along with Mike and Carl. They said it very well, you know, the experience in that setting and Al-Qaeda's performances in the past. But I'll tell you, everyone has to break through some point, and so you're always kind of like an underdog to pick when they're going to break through. But I've seen Miesco play. I've played him a couple times, and I've watched him play a bunch of times, and I just feel that in the last couple of years, he's really, really, really coming on strong. The only reason you could say, well, he hasn't really won anything, well, it's been COVID. He hasn't had a lot of opportunities. Is this his opportunity? I think that he plays so well that, and even against this field, I think he plays so well that at some point your game will prop you up through this arena. And I just think he's hitting a lot of balls, and I'll say he has what it takes. I think that he's going to be a regular here.
So what do you think about David? Do you think he gets in too, or do you think just one of these players is able to sneak through?
Well, I mean, they're both very live. It's going to be, you know, how many, I guess I don't understand. Like when you say get in, like they have to win the group to advance at some point, right? They have to win against everybody. I mean, it's going to be tough for either of them to win. And I don't know who's coming in and who's, you know, what the future groups are going to look like. But if they've got competition like Clenty and Albin and Filler, I don't, you know, neither one of them is probably going to win that group. So as those guys win the groups and weed out, you know, are they in the running? As you know, you pull a couple of those big names out of there, either one of them has what it takes. Yeah. But right now, it's going to have to be on a later in stages of the tournament.
All right, perfect. So let's move on to group three. Billy Thorpe and Darren Appleton join the action. So why don't you take this one first, Carl, then?
Yeah, same with Billy. I think he's going to be an underdog. You know, he's got a lot on his shoulders. We all know what happened recently. Matchroom, you know, obviously everyone deserves a second chance, so they've put him straight in the event. But again, he's not really done enough on the world stage in singles events for me to back him. Darren, again, I'm not quite sure what to expect. Obviously, he's won pretty much everything the game has got to offer. He's been out of action, even pre-COVID. He wasn't quite at the races with the, you know, with the game. He's had personal issues going on in his life, so I can't even remember the last sort of big pool tournament he's won. So I'm intrigued to see how he gets on. I know he'll be putting the work in and the effort. Wouldn't be surprised if he qualifies for a group. If anyone's going to do it, it will be Appleton. So out of the two, I fancy Appleton, you know, playing some good stuff and making it through to the final group, to be fair. I really do. I think he's got the hunger. I think he wants to prove a point. I think he's a bit of a forgotten man in the game. And, yeah, he's still got the hunger.
Mike, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, with Darren, I think it's going to come down to Darren. I mean, I think there's some people who are in who maybe are already playing or who are in subsequent groups, that it's really not up to them. I mean, they've got to play so far over their head to make it through the kind of matches they're going to be playing. With Darren, I mean, it's on Darren. If Darren wants it and if Darren is hungry and he brings his A game, hell, he could win the entire event. I don't see the same with Billy. I mean, yeah, he's capable. He could play over his head and I don't see Billy making it out of a group. I mean, he's going to get a couple shots at it. Don't get me wrong. He's not going to be eliminated early, but yeah, he's got a lot going on in his head, and I mean, Carl would know Darren's probably got a lot going on in his head, but I think Darren, again, has the experience, especially on a matchroom stage, that, you know, this is all, he's going to feel at home when he gets out there and the cameras turn on and they say, okay, go. Darren's just going to say, oh, you know, I'm in my favorite pool room now. So, yeah, I see Darren. If I had to make a pick, I don't think it's a lock, but I think Darren makes it into the final group. And no, I don't think Billy does.
Demetrius, what do you think?
I think that it's going to be hard for both of them for all the reasons said. Billy's, you know, I think the format is really demanding because if you had like a bracket with like eight people and it was single elimination, you know, and somebody was going to win, any of these players could win three matches. But when you have to play seven matches, short sets, where you have very little time to settle in, you know, you have very few opportunities to make errors, and then you have to go to bed and wake up and then just start again and do this. It's like against somebody else. It's just any of these players could catch a gear and get playing really good, but to do it set after set after set with very, very high levels of consistency, I think it's going to be tough for both of them to maintain that. And Darren, yes, of course, when he was in his peak. And I think the problem with Darren is he's probably playing technically at a very high level. Like he might go to his home room table and practice and run 250 balls or something. But I think the problem is, you know, just a little bit of ring rust. When you practice too much and you're doing too many drills and you're not in the competitive ring, your game just gets a little out of balance where you're really, really strong, but you're it's like your timing's off as far as how you deliver your game. And it's just, you know, a few things that can kind of get sneaky on you. A couple moves here, a couple clutch shots there. So in the end, I think it's going to be going back and thinking about this format. I actually think it's going to be tough for Fortunski. And I think I don't see Darren or Billy winning a bracket. Just given the round robin format, it's just too tough. It's just too tough.
Yeah. All right. So, I mean, for sake of time, I would say I don't see Billy making it out. Darren, I think, is an intriguing one. And you touched on a little bit of the things I wanted to highlight with it. I think when we go back to 2018 and 2019, you know, right before COVID kind of hit, Darren was making a comeback. I mean, he was buying in, he was traveling, he was playing in the big events, and he was starting to he wasn't winning events like Carl said, but he was starting to make some quarters and some semis. And I believe he made the semifinals of the Diamond Las Vegas Open, the last tournament that actually before everything got shut down. And that's a real event. I mean, that's not the U.S. Open, but that has, you know, that probably has 50 of the top, you know, 125 players in the world. That is a real event that a lot of players go to. And I believe Darren made the quarterfinals of that, which is, that's pretty good. I mean, he was on his way back. Now, COVID hits, and, you know, I know he was playing a little bit in the beginning, and he was motivated, but kind of as Carl said before we really got going, you watch the news and you keep up to date with what's going on, and then eventually you just get burnt out from doing it. And I think Darren just wasn't keeping up with his game like he may have done if he was 25 or, you know, still had the passion for the game like he did when he was a younger man. But I think the biggest difficulty of when I'm taking time off personally and then I get back into the game, it's usually not physical. Usually about a match or two, you know, even if I just practice the night before, the muscle memory comes back. It's the mental fortitude that it takes to play short sets, get your focus to a high level, take it back down, get it back up to a high level, bring it back down. And this constant back and forth of getting an intense level of focus and then learning how to turn that off so you don't burn yourself off and then turn it back on immediately so it doesn't take 3 to 4 games into a set before you know you're really into the match mentally. I think that's the hardest part for me when I'm taking time off. And I think that because of that, I think Darren hasn't played much in, I mean, not a lot of players have anyways, but Darren wasn't maybe quite back to his peak form pre-COVID, so I think it'll take a little bit longer for him to get that. I think he has a chance of doing some damage in this tournament, maybe a couple second places, a third. As Carl would say, I fancy him to sneak out of each, but not quite come up. Maybe a couple seconds, a third, but I don't think he's going to be able to make it out, unfortunately. So I don't see either of these players making out, even though they're going to have five opportunities. So, but if Darren made it out in a squeaker right over top of somebody else, it wouldn't surprise me either. So
Well, I think because it's race to five, it's short races, you're going to get a lot of close matches. You know, even if somebody gets out the gate and it's 4-1, before you know it, it's 4-3. And for me, you're going to, you know, somebody like Fortunski plays very quick and fluent, and he's the type of player, and I've played him a lot, and he's the type of player in a race to 11. If he goes 4-1, 5-1, he can blow you off in 20 minutes. It's game over. But he's not the type of player who likes that nitty-gritty fight. When things are not quite going his way, because that's pool, you could start a match and just nothing's going your way. And you have to grind it out and pinch them little racks where, you know, you've made a full-length bank and then he's broke dry and it's a must-finish. I think this format is made for Darren Appleton. Make no mistake about it, he will be practicing 15 hours a day before this event. And you're going to have a lot of clutch moments where it's 4-3, 4-4, and who's got the biggest cojones to run the rack? And he's got the biggest cojones to run that type of rack out of anybody in the field. Let's get it right. So I think he'll make it out of a group, no problem.
Yeah. The only thing I would say is I think getting into matches mentally might be the biggest hurdle for him. So can he come back from 3-1 multiple times? Maybe, probably, but we'll see. All right, so let's move on to group four. And we have joining this one, Christina Takech and Nayuki Oi. Mike, I believe this one's your turn to start out. Go ahead.
All right, and I'm gonna make a statement that may come across a little controversial. I think there was a time when Matchroom invited some players to their events. We don't need to get too specific about names, but I think they invited some players who definitely had the ability, and they could certainly compete and win against the rest of the field, but they were there for the comments they were going to make after the match. You know, they were there for the interview. They were there for what kind of controversial and goofy things they were going to say. Is that Nayuki Oi now? I mean, look, the guy can win, certainly, but is he there to win the event, or is he there for them to get a camera on him so he can make YouTube moments viral, after the match is over?
That's really interesting. Well, Carl,
I mean, at the end of the day, he's probably not even the best player in Japan, right? But as I said before,
who is?
Well, I would think
Hideki Arita,
Toru Kuribashi is probably better than him. What was the world champion called again?
I'm not sure.
What was the guy called?
By Fargo, I think. This is an interesting. I'll actually figure it out for you here in a second. But
what was he called? Now the world champion from Japan.
I'm not sure either. But
my mind's gone blank. Mike, you should know the answer to this. Come on. My mind's gone blank. No, I mean, listen. I'm not saying he's not a good player. No, not Loli.
Hayato Hajikata.
No, not him. But so you've probably just named three players better than him.
I'm going through the Fargo, and of course, whatever you want to think about Fargo. Nayuki Oi, and this is actually what I was going to say, is Nayuki Oi is an 802 Fargo. That puts him one behind Albin Ocean and three in head of Alex Kazakis. Now,
yeah, but how many tournaments, big majors, is he behind him?
Well, that's what I was going to say. I think Nayuki Oi might be, and we'll go controversial, I guess, he might be the most overrated great player that's out there, in a sense that he plays everybody really close, but he never gets there when it matters the most. The dude is an absolute beast on the table, but like you said, he doesn't have that big victory that says, you know, this is, you know, he's not a world champion. He's never won something like the U.S. Open or the Derby City or even a Turning Stone or, you know, a quality of tournament, something like that. I mean, is that, that's kind of what you're getting at, Carl?
I mean, at the end of the day, I think Mike's got a fair point, but at the same time, I don't see it as a big issue because, I mean, who are you going to pick anyway? I mean, there's no like 100% world ranking system. You know, forget the world rankings; they're a waste of time. Mm-hmm. So, you know, who are you going to pick? I think potentially, you know, obviously he's a great player. I'm not going to say he's not a great player. He's a very good player, of course he is. But maybe in his own mind, he needs to just rein it in a little bit, because he's probably not doing himself a justice on the table. Keep, you know, doing the goofy thing, and at some point it will catch you out. You know, you look at the likes of Albin and Joshua Filler, and you know, these guys, and Shane Van Bonen. You look at these guys; they go into autopilot, zoned in on the table to win the match. And I've been guilty before, where I'm looking around the room, I'm thinking about what I'm going to do later, and before you know it, you've made a stupid mistake and you've lost the match. And I think that's what he's guilty of doing, to be fair. And I think he's been in enough matchroom events now. I think it's time to step up to the plate, because the invites aren't going to keep coming, that's for sure.
Yuki Aka...
That's it, Yuki Akirama. Akiyama. He won the World Nine Ball Championships. You know, he was a class player, but maybe he's just not playing as much in the world events, so he's not as spoke about. But you know, Yukio was he was an awesome player. I think he beat Shane actually in the final.
Oh well, bummer for Shane. He needed one of those.
Yeah, he beat Shane in the World Nine Ball final.
It's just crazy to think that, you know, if you pulled probably, what, 50, if you pulled the pool world that actually knew, you know, paid attention to the game, and you made a poll that said who is the greatest pool player of all time, Shane Van Boning would get minimum 10% of the votes, and he's never won a world championship. It's just absolutely crazy to think that.
I know, but well, go on, Demetrius, sorry.
Oh, yeah, no problem. I was going to jump in on this Nyoki Oi, because that's actually a really good point. So I feel that Oi is a very strange case, because I've watched him play a ton, because I've studied his game, because I'm like, how is he that effective? You know, like his focus seems a little weird. His approach to the game, his fundamentals, his kind of flippy kind of style. It just seems, you know, his stroke, everything seems like, I'm looking at him like, but he gets a lot done. Now we can point and say, well, he hasn't won a major, which for sure that's true. But you know, an 802 Fargo, you don't get that because, you know, somebody, if that's not an invitation that he got an 802 Fargo, which means he's won a lot of games and he's won a lot of matches against the very best of the world. And when we talk about Shane not winning a world championship, listen, the level of competition is so deep that there's many great, great, great players that haven't won a world championship. And sometimes when you get that win, like Filler or Fedor, then you get that confidence and you go on a tear. But there's a lot of players that don't get that win and never quite get on that tear. So I'm not saying that Oi is as good as Albin or Clenty, but what I am saying is that I don't think he's overrated. I think he's somehow the sum of his game is greater than the parts that assemble it. And that even his attitude, you know, we're talking about the distraction and focus. I think there's different ways to motivate yourself. And guys like Earl or certain players use a lot of anger and rage. When I look at Oi, I see a guy that's playful and joyful. And he reminds me of like Alex Pagulayan. And Alex Pagulayan was very, very playful. You know, he would drop the cue ball on the floor instead of handing it to his opponent when he scratched, or these different antics with getting like he was going to shoot and then pulling off his backstroke and passing the push. All these little antics didn't distract him from being the best money player in the world and winning world championships and U.S. Opens. I think Oi's got the same playful attitude. I think he's playful, but he's deadly, deadly, deadly intense and serious when he's at the table. Somehow he's extremely effective. I don't know that he wins one of these groups, but that says more. Again, he's never won a major either. It says more about his competition than it says about him as a player. So I think he's going to be a very serious threat. And I wouldn't bet on him to get in just because the doorway is so small. But I really, really admire his game, and I think he's going to be very competitive.
Yeah.
What were you going to say about Shane? Carl, you were going to say something about Shane not winning a title. A world championship.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, to be fair, you know, I've never thought of Shane not winning the World 9 Ball or, let's say, the World 8 Ball Championships or when the World 10 Ball's on, and thought, I don't feel like you need to win one of them, if that makes sense. I think he's won more than enough. I think to win 5 US Opens in 10 years, I think it's probably one of, if not the greatest achievements, you know, in the history of pool. He's won 2 World Masters. He might not have won the World 9 Ball, but he's definitely been beating one final. I'm certain it could be 2. I think he's been beating 2. I think Albin's beat him, and I think Yukio's beat him. So I don't really look at Shane thinking he needs to win a world title to stake a claim for anything. Maybe from his own personal point of view, he'd like to win it, of course, but I don't see it as a big issue whether he wins one or not. I think he's done more than enough in the game.
I don't want to go down this this kind of rabbit hole of Shane, but if Shane were to win, let's say the U.S. Open, or not the U.S., let's say he wins the World Nine Ball Championships, do you think he'd be the,
well,
the
let me
best
just,
player of
can
all
I
time?
Just put, can I just put in, Fedor won the World Nine Ball Championships. He was it a little bit premature, let's be honest. To go out there so young, win the World Nine Ball Championships, before you've really, you know, gone deep in big majors, I think sometimes you just win a certain tournament, things go your way, and sometimes you lose a tournament, and yeah, it's just a pool tournament. You know, as Dimitri said, the fields are so difficult. You know, you could like have a complete nightmare in the World Nine Ball Championships, but do so good in the US Open with the same field. It's just so tough.
Do you think that would put him in the category of the best of all time, or do you think it would be yours if he did have a world title, or do you think it just doesn't matter for what he's done?
Yeah, I don't think it matters. Gotcha. That's my personal opinion. But
all right, so I guess back to the Naoki Oe and Kristina Takeuchi. Of course, we haven't said a single word about Kristina yet at this point. not to disrespect Kristina in any sort of way, she is a great up and coming player. I don't think that I think. The fact that none of us have really discussed her much kind of just means that she's a little bit out of her element here. I'm rooting for her because I know her a little bit personally, and she's really actually a wonderful person. A lot of fun to talk to and a lot of fun to be around, and she is a great ambassador for the game going forward. With that being said, I don't think she's a huge favorite in this. So let me move on to Naoki Oe. I am a huge fan of Naoki Oe, both obviously from a marketing perspective, but also as far as on the table. He reminds me a lot of actually like a player like Ralph Suke, where he kind of just goes along with it and just. Well,
Let me finish.
Ralph Suke doesn't do anything flashy on the table. He just wins. Now, Ralph Suke has a resume of, you know, the guy's won nine world masters. You know, we could go through his resume. But the idea is when you watch him play, you would never watch that guy and be like, this guy is one of the best who ever did it. And you kind of look at Naoki Oe and it's kind of the same way, but he just kind of wins. He just gets out of racks. He doesn't do it in a flashy way. He doesn't do it in an overly powerful way. He just kind of wins. Now, Ralph Suke, like I said, of course, it just reminds me a little bit about him because they have this similar kind of playing style where you don't watch them and think that this guy's going to be the best. Right. But now the separating factor is Naoki Oe just doesn't seem to get it done once you get to the point where you have to get it done. And Ralph Suke did. When Ralph Suke had to get it done, he just did it. And Naoki Oe doesn't seem to. So is he going to this event? I actually like him to get to the, I like him to get out. And it's only because at this point in time, he's in group four. So three players are going to be out. I don't think it's going to be impossible to see Albin, Joshua, and Eklanti out of the bracket at this point. And then if you look at who's left, you're looking at, you know, players that, is it a huge upset if he makes it out of a group with Niels, Kelly, Chris Melling, David Alkaidi, Miensko Fortunski type of Billy Thorpe, Darren Appleton? Is it impossible for him to win that? I don't think so. I like him to get out at this point in time. I think he's got a real good chance of it. Maybe not in this one, but I like him to get out. So, Carl, what do you think?
I think I need to have a drink of what you've been drinking.
Well, that's fun.
You compared Naoki to Ralph Suke. I mean, they're total opposite ends of the spectrum, right? Do you know what I mean?
I only mean in their playing, not in their playing style. the way that they just you just don't look at him and say like this guy's the best, but like Ralph Suke just nothing flashy about him. He just gets shit done. He's a great player.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I'm not so sure about Naoki getting through. I think when it comes down to the crunch and it's that 4-3, 4-4. I just don't know if he's going to get the job done. He's very kind of a bit erratic when he plays pool. And yeah, I'm just going to... and his cue actions, fundamentals, are all a bit you know, crazy. And I think in that environment where, you know, the ball needs to go in the hole, I don't see him qualifying. That's my view.
All right. Again, I'm assuming that we haven't talked about Christina again, that that one's... Does anybody want to say anything there?
I think it's pretty clear. I mean, this is a round-robin format with some of the greatest champions that have ever played the game. We know going in that not everybody that enters this tournament is going to be capable of winning the event, and you can't fill it up with, you know, 30 Alvin Oceans or Joshua Fillers. You just can't. So you've got to bring in the top champions and then fill it up with as many great players as you can get. And these are players that are going to play great. These are players that are going to win matches. They're going to win monies. They're going to have some upsets. And that's good. But, yeah, I mean, that's what's going to happen.
Yeah. All right. So moving on to group five, we have Mark Biesterbosch and Roberto Gomez. Demetrius, we are back to you. Go away. Go ahead.
You know what? I'm not even familiar with the first person saying.
Mark Biesterbosch. He is Dutch. He played on he's played a couple of World Cup of Pools with, I believe he actually played last year with Niels, not last year, of course, but 2 years ago with Niels Fein. He's a promising player. He's maybe mid-30s, Carl? Mid to late 30s?
Yeah, maybe around the 30 mark, I would say. Late 20s, 30.
Yeah, I can't speak to his chances, of course. I think that Gomez is very, very live. I think Gomez has been in a lot of action, been playing a lot. You know, he's been, I actually think that he's poised to strike. And yeah, I think he could do really well in this format. And again, you know, now that the some of the first round picks have been kind of weeded out and already escaped the bracket, I think that Gomez will be one of the stronger players by the time he enters. So I'll give him the green light, and I'll just have to watch and learn as far as his comrade here.
Yeah, Mark is not one of. I mean, Europe is just so deep, right? I mean, if a Joshua Filler drew a Mark Biesterbosch in the opening round of a European Championship, he likes it probably because you know, because it's, you know, he's not drawing a world champion or something like that when he could. But he's not. I'll guarantee he's not going to be taking it lightly. He's a respectable player, but he's not in that top tier. He's probably not even in that second tier, but he's probably in about that, you know, he's comfortably in that third tier of European players, I would say. Roberto Gomez, yeah, I mean, he's it's interesting because of course he can play in the US Open, but you don't see him really play. Maybe he's played a couple World Cup of Pools, but he hasn't really been on this stage all that much. In fact, he's kind of one of the people that you know, he kind of just goes around and just kind of gambles, does some big matchups here and there. And, you know, he plays in the stray US event, but he doesn't really strike me as like a huge tournament player. So this is actually going to be kind of an interesting, we'll say, atmosphere for him. I have no idea. I can't even, of course he's going to be plenty talented enough to make it out, but if he played just absolutely terrible, it wouldn't surprise me a bit either, just because the format's going to be so weird. I don't know. Carl, what do you think?
Yeah, I think Biesterbosch, very good player. I think he's taking the game like more serious now. He's playing all over the world. I want to say I'm certain he won like a big tournament in America. I think he won like a 10-ball event in America where he took down a strong field. He's a capable player. How much effort he is putting in before this event, I don't know. I'm going to stick to my guns and still kind of back that. The guys who have done it on the Matchroom stage, you know, kind of like that Moscone Cup type player, you know, where they've played the race to fives and all this. Is he going to qualify? I'm not so sure. I think he will win matches. He's a dangerous player. Gomez, interesting one. I think Gomez is still battle-scarred from 2007 World Nine Ball Championships. That was Matchroom's last World Nine Ball Championships. It was live on Sky. It was in the Philippines. He beat yours truly in the semi-final. He was playing unbelievably in that event, right? That was one of my first big majors that I went to. So I was like in awe of what was going on. As I said, it was live all over the world. There were thousands there. It was in the Araneta Coliseum in the Philippines. And He was playing Daryl Peach in the final, and everyone thought he was a shoo-in to win this final. He was going to get paid loads of money, get houses off the government and all this. And he lost the match. It was a close match. And near the end of the match, he wobbled. He was very shaky. The nerves got the better of him. And I know it's 14 years ago, but he's disappeared for me. And he's not been playing in any of the kind of matchroom events. And I think he's never recovered from that defeat. And I don't think he's going to do too well in this event.
Mike?
It's funny. When Demetrius was talking, I was just looking up the results thinking, God, it was played Gomez. And I looked it up on the site. Was that the tournament where there was the huge controversy between Peach and Bustamante on a hit?
Yeah, I was actually, funny one really, I was playing, Daryl Peach was playing on table one. He was playing Bustamante, and I was playing on table two on the complete opposite side, but it was the same arena. And I was playing, do you remember Joe Van Bustamante? I'm not sure if he was a relation to Francisco or they were cousins. And all of a sudden, there's loads of screaming, and there was a massive screen above. So our match was stopped because all this screaming was going on. And basically, Busty has like gone off the bottom rail and he's clipped a ball, and then I think Daryl or whatever's gone on said, oh, I think that was a foul. They've gone back to the playback and it was a foul. Peach got ball in hand. But yeah, that was the event. You know, it was 2007. It's a long time ago. And, you know, when you look at, you know, if you'd have said Roberto Gomez would have got to the final of the World Nine Ball Championships 14 years ago, nearly 14 years ago, and not really done anything since, you'd probably say you need to go and see a doctor, mate.
Yeah.
You know, it's 14 years. What's he been doing?
It's the Jordan Spieth effect.
I don't know what he's been doing. Has he been playing? Where's he been playing? But he's not got the experience, you know, going around gambling and playing in your jeans and your trackies. He's not the same as showing up to a matchroom event where you're playing the likes of Filler and Albin Ocean.
Yeah, Gomez, you know, I think people see him as one of the second-tier Filipino players, and I don't, you know, ability-wise, I don't think he's second-tier at all. But, boy, you just think about if he had won that match against Peach, which I think he was supposed to win. You know, like Carl had said, going in, I think he was the favorite. Was that the tournament with the Sardo rack and how predictable the racks were after the break each time?
Yeah, I don't know if it was a Sardo rack, but I know the break was very easy. You were just kind of like tapping the break and the wing ball was wired and all this. But I think what stood out in the event is he just blew, you know, he played Niels in the first round. He won like 11-1. He just blew the field to bits. You know, I'm not so sure how old Roberto is now, but you know, when you think about it, it's 14 years ago, you know, he wouldn't have been very old. And he was, you know, the likes of Efren and Bustamante and Ronnie Alcano had won the World Nine Ball Championships. There was a lot of pressure on him and he just kind of collapsed. Yeah, has he been playing? You know, he's not really played in any matchroom events. You know, I don't know.
He's actually sneaky old, 43 years old. So he was actually 29 at
that
time.
That is sneaky old, by the way. Wow. Yeah, I thought he was about 30.
Yeah, that's sneaky old. Yeah, he was born in 1978.
Well, listen, the guy's early 40s. And if you look at his pool resume, and we're talking about, you know, matchroom events or World Nine Ball Championships or World Ten Balls and you know, US Opens before matchroom took it over. I'm not so sure really what he's done to warrant, you know, being classed as beating the big guys.
Here you go, Carl. I'm looking at his Wikipedia page, and I see 2007 World Nine Ball Championship. And since then, what's on his resume is he played in the 2010 World Cup of Pool. And he won the Derby City Bigfoot Challenge in 2016. That's on his record since then. So that's his resume.
I mean, obviously the Bigfoot events, we all know about them. 16 players, all monster players. They're not easy to win. Nobody's saying Gomez, he's not a class player. He is a class player, but it's no good being a class player if you've not got everything else that you need to win at pool. So.
It's just interesting, you know, I think if you go back to that 07 World Championship and how we would be looking at things differently had that final match gone different. You know, yeah. Daryl is not a world champion if he doesn't win that. Roberto is. You think of the accolades that come out of the Philippines. Now all of a sudden he's looked at in the same group with Efren and Bustamante and Alcano and Dennis. You know, it's one match. And what's interesting is Carl was talking about how it was one of his first matchroom events and how the newness of the event and everything. You know, for Roberto, it had to be two. And you're getting into the finals and you're thinking, man, this was easy. You know, I ran over Nils. I mean, I ran over that scrub in the match before this. You know, this has got to be a piece of cake.
And I was 4-0 up as well. And he won 11-4.
You know, he let his nerves get to him there at the end. And it's that one tournament, you could theoretically go back and look at and say that, you know, the huge effect that had on his career. In media, we look at Moscone Cup and Michael Coltrane and how most people in the media kind of feel that Moscone Cup destroyed Coltrane. It was just too much for him and he couldn't bounce back from that. And Gomez is the same way. With that being said, though, I was going to ask, you know, we all have our favorites. And I think if we had to write down which seven players we thought were going to make it into the final group, we would probably have at least five of the same names. If I'm going to go out on a limb, I'll say Gomez makes the final group because I got to pick a dark horse. I'll give it to Gomez. I say that he's one that I think could shock some people. He's going to have a slightly easier group to deal with when he gets there. And I think he can make it. Bisterbach, no, I'm sorry. And that's due to my own ignorance. That's not due to any lack of ability with him. That's just because I don't know his game that well.
I want to talk about this World Championship Finals real quick. I have a different idea about it, which is that, you know, there's two narratives. One is that moment scarred him, cost him an opportunity to build confidence, and instead gave him the scar and the doubt. It could be the other way around, which is that pool at the highest level is a weird thing because you have to be kind of almost insane to put in the effort and fire and passion to get to that level. But then you can't have demons that destroy you in competition. You know, you have to be able to hold up mentally. And what I've seen is a couple of things. I've personally known some players that play physically as well as anybody, but they just have too much in their head. It's kind of like, you know, I not to pick on the guy, but it's like new Earl versus old Earl, right? You know, it wasn't his game that fell apart. It was his mind that went before his game. And so at one point he was able to rein in the demons and beat everyone in the world. Not today. I've seen other players that are top physical, top flight, but they just, it's so hard to hold your, and have to be able to put that together at that level. And then what happens, I've also seen, is that as players get older, that their eccentricities kind of expand. They get weirder. They get more, like in the beginning when they're 20, you can kind of start to see some quirks in their personality. When they're 30, they're more pronounced. When they're 40, the people are almost crazy. And maybe the pressure adds up. So it's like, that's why I think a lot of young players do so well. Their quirks haven't turned into insanity yet. So anyway, my point is, I think there just might be players that don't quite have the fortitude to win at the major stage. And that it's just, they're not going to be able to do that. And some of them you never hear about because they can't even go play in those arenas. It just hurts them too much to lose, or they just scars them too much. They can't even compete without going crazy. But then guys, you know, and I'm not saying Gomez is like this, but it could be that there's a group of players that are physically talented enough, but just don't have the head game. And if that's the case, maybe the finals wasn't the scarring event. Maybe that was always going to be the case, and that was just where we got to see his limitations kind of exposed. I don't know.
Definitely, it's an interesting thought. Yeah. All right, so the last two, we'll just – there's no reason to probably talk about both of them because one gets two chances and one gets one chance. So I guess we have in group six, we have Alex Kazakas coming in and Kasper Montekainen. I believe that's how it's pronounced. And then the last group is Dennis Grabe and Jasmine Ocean. I guess let's just talk about these as a whole. Do we really think any of these four players have a chance? Basically, you have to win the group that you're in. Or, I mean, of course, Alex and Casper get two chances at it. But Dennis and Jasmine, they get exactly one chance. I guess it's my turn to start. I don't see a reason why Dennis Grabe can't win. I think that pre-COVID, he was really starting to settle in as kind of topping out that second tier of European professional players. He wasn't in the Joshua Fillers or, you know, Fedor Gorst now or Joshua or Jason Shaw or anything like that. But I kind of saw him starting to get to the point where he was rising to that second tier of players in Europe. We haven't seen him since, but we haven't really seen any of these players since. But I just have to go back to where that was last time. He only has one chance to win, but I really, really liked his game about a year ago at this time, and I thought he was really making his way up. So I could see him winning his last day and his only opportunity getting in. Alex Kazakis, the same way. I could see Alex easily getting in as well. I know he's been playing a decent amount of pool through lockdown, so those are kind of my two players. Carl, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, the other side of the coin is you could argue that they're going to come in and they're going to be playing people that have been there a little bit longer than them, so they're a little bit fresher. You never know. You know, if you've been there from day one and you're still in the event and Grabe and Kazakis, you know, are coming in and matching up, there could be a little bit of fatigue to some degree because it's a lot of pool, you know, I know they play, but when you play under that type of heat, you know, it can take a lot out of you. But as you said, wouldn't be surprised if either of them guys, you know, qualify. That's for sure.
Mike, what do you think?
If somebody's going to qualify out of that group, I think it's Kazakis. Kazakis seems like if you're not in the finals of the event, he's a tier one player. You know, he can beat anybody that he's playing. And you're not going to be really surprised. Oh, Alex beat Kachi. Yeah, I can see that happening. He beat him in the finals. Oh, well, good for him. You know, Kazakis seems like the kind of guy that's going to win a major. And when he does, all hell's going to break loose. And he's just going to start winning major after major. But until then, I don't know. But, you know, we're talking about groups. Getting out of his group, yes. I think Kazakis can get out of the group. I don't think the other three players really have the opportunity to get out of their group.
Demetrius?
Yeah, I think opportunity is the key. If you switch Dennis and Alex and had, you know, two swings with Dennis, I think that he might. I think that, you know, Carl's got a point. Fatigue, you know, versus freshness might play a role. But I think two swings is a big deal. I mean, he's skill aside, he's twice as likely to get through, right? And I think that there's something else, which is that, you know, if he has a rough first try, you know, he can settle in and kind of think about what he wants to do different and really come back and swing again while he's still fresh enough to make a dent. So I think you give a guy like Alex Kazakis two swings at this thing, I think he's going to get in. You know, race to five, matchup experience, you know, top level pool, check, 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 check. To Mike's point, the only thing he's missing is a major title, but that's not required to win a race to five and get to round two. So I got to go with Alex getting in. And yeah. And I think Dennis could, if he was in earlier in this field, I think he'd be very alive.
Yep. All right. So with that, we'll wrap up that discussion there. We have one more listener question that we'll talk about. This is from Chad Kelly. And basically what his question is in so many words is, what are the different types of tables? Basically, he's looking to buy a pool table, and he gave me a budget. And he basically said he's a little new to the game, and he wants to know what the different types of pool tables are, what are the pros and cons of each, and which one should he end up buying. I don't think we should end up going into the third one probably, but I think just talking about different types of pool tables and what the pros and cons are of each, I think is that's kind of a fun conversation. Carl, you've played at the highest levels, of course. Why don't you take this one first?
Yeah, I mean, I've played on probably pretty much every pool table that's been seen on TV, I would say, or in a major tournament. I think pretty much all the top branded tables, you know, play at a good quality. I think a lot of it, to be fair, is going to come down to what you want in your house or your personal games room or, you know, that type of thing, depending on where he's putting it. Does he want something modern? I've just recently launched a YouTube channel, so the table I wanted for my channel, I wanted it to be super modern and cool and, you know, not very antique looking. So I got a Clash table from over in Europe, very good table, very well made steel, you know, it's built with steel and it's got all the proper Artemis rubbers on. Obviously, if you're in America, diamond table seem to be the most popular. I would be right in saying that, would I?
I would say as far as the real pool, yes. I would say I would guess that valleys are significantly more popular as far as just numbers. But that's just, you know, they're a cheaper table and they're a much lower quality table. So I would guess that valley pool tables are more popular as far as just raw numbers. But I, yes, diamonds are, as far as real pool halls, I would say diamonds.
Well, Demetrius was hitting balls before. What were you hitting balls on?
Oh, yeah. Did you hear that in the background?
Yeah.
So, okay. I didn't realize that. Anyway, listen, I got to go diamond. Now, I know that with budget, that's the first thing that's going to go, right? Because it's the most expensive table probably. But what I would say is you know, there's different, like, you've got different types of people. Some people don't need a pool table at home. They can just go to the pool hall or they don't even play. If depending on, it's all about how important pool is in your life. For someone like me, I don't play at the top stage, but if pool is too big of a part of my life, listen, I'll cut in a lot of spots. I'll cut on the type of car I drive. I'll cut my budget as far as going out to eat, you know, maybe whatever. Maybe I'll skip on my, you know, my parents' medical, you know, support in the hospital, whatever. You know, things I can flex in a lot of areas. But when it comes to the table I play on, okay, I don't ask for much of my life. I really don't need that much. And it's a one-time investment that lasts so long. You know, so the difference between buying a table for $1,500 to $2,000 or $2,500 and then having somebody kind of tack some, you know, some shag carpet on the thing, it's like, look, I can go all in, get the right balls, the right lights, the right table, everything, brand new. Don't get anything your secondhand where it's got quirks and you spend $7,000 and you're upset with something. Don't even open that door. I say, just pick everything top shelf, spend the money, take out a second mortgage. I don't care, because that thing will be perfect every time you use it for decades, and pay the guy to install it, make sure it gets it, you know, and that's where I would say. Now, that all being said, If there's no way to rearrange your life and just say, I got to fit a good pool table in, if that's impossible, of course, I'd rather have a table than not. And then what I would say is you can probably pick up like a used gold crown, assuming you want a 9 foot. When I think pool, I think 9 foot. Bar tables, I can't speak to. But anyway, 9 foot, you can pick up a gold crown, probably pick one up for $2,000. And then what I would say is pay somebody really good to install it, because the person who sets up, you know, somebody who maybe redoes the rails and puts on that cloth, the person who sets it up and installs it and levels it, you know, getting the most out of that table is almost as important as the brand. And you don't want to spend thousands of dollars on a table and cut corners on the installer. So first choice would be top of the line diamond. Second choice would be pick up a used gold crown and make sure you tip the guy that's setting it up and get somebody that's really going to have that thing tuned up, playing well for you. You'll be happy either way.
Demetrius, you never answered his question. He has a 9 foot diamond, Carl.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, I got the diamond. Yeah.
So, it kind of comes down to what are you looking for, a little bit like Demetrius said. If you're just looking for something to bash balls around and you're just trying to stay in tune, you know, in between your APA league nights, a Valley pool table is not only cheap, it is semi-decent. That is like the lowest I would ever go as far as quality on anything. Yeah, exactly. If you're looking to play proper pool, of course, that's 9 foot. And 9 foot, a gold crown is kind of like the valley of the second hand anyways. The gold crowns play much better, but you can get them usually at a pretty decent price, $700-$800, something like that. Usually you can get yourself a nice gold crown for. But at the end of the day, I think as far as like real pool, it's got to be a diamond. It's going to be the most consistent. You never have to worry about it rolling off. You never have to worry about, you know, your slate warping or anything like that. It's the best of the best as far as that goes. But nobody's discussed this yet, but I think the professionals got to be playing on the Rassans, because the side pockets on those, on the diamonds, the side pockets are like, please, please God, give me a side pocket shot. I mean, the side pockets are massive. And when you play on those Rassans, it takes away the easiest two pockets on the table, and it turns them into, you know, just as hard as any other shot. And I think that that's what it should be at the pro level. If you're not a professional pool player, I don't think you have to have that. Of course, you still can. But I think the Rassans is where the professional pool should be played on, personally, just because of the side pockets.
But you know what? Maybe they should be played on that, but everything's played on diamonds. And so the reason I go diamond is because when I play Derby, when I play the U.S. Open, when I play any of the tournaments, I go play, what are they playing on a match room? I mean, it's when I go, maybe that's different. I don't know. I haven't played in that field. But like every tournament I go to is on a diamond. Mm-hmm. So I want to play on exactly what I compete on. Yep. And so, yeah, that's it.
Yeah. Mike?
Well, considering that of the four guys here in this conversation, I am by far the fourth tier player in this group. You know, when I miss a ball, it's not because of the table. I miss a ball because I missed a ball. I'm going to go back to what Demetrius was saying, though. Pro events right now, you know, there was a time when they were all held on Brunswick's, but nowadays, at least in the States, if there's a pro event, it's being held on a diamond. You know, local pool rooms, they're looking at how soon can I upgrade my tables to diamonds. And Rassen is coming in. And I see Rassen in some of the worldwide events. But still here in the States, diamond is what everyone shoots for. And you know, if you have the money, I think that's what you go with. Of course, you can pick up, you know, you can put a Valley in your home for a tenth of the cost of a diamond. But I know a number of people who are willing to spend that money. So, yeah. If you want to play on what the pros are playing on right now, at least in the States, it's a diamond.
Yeah, I agree. All right, well, that brings this to a close. This went a lot longer than I was expecting it to go for the first one. So either that's going to be, well, we're going to have a discussion on it, I guess, at this point. But if you've been around since the beginning, or if you've been tuning in and you made it to this point, thank you, everybody, for watching. Demetrius, top left, thank you very much for joining. Mike Howerton, AZ Billiards, thank you for joining. And Carl Boys, thanks for joining as well.
Been a pleasure.
All right. Thanks, everybody.
See you soon, guys.
Until next time. Thanks for coming to my party. Now that we're all wrapped, bro, it's time to go home.
Hey everyone, thanks again for listening. If you've liked what you've heard and you want to contribute to the future content that will be made, consider joining the podcast's Patreon at www.patreon.com/queueitup. Becoming a Patreon of the podcast will help to create all of the future content that the podcast will have. Special shout out to Dave Peters, Aaron Taylor, Pete Silsby, Morgan Lupton, Ben Young, Robert Miller, Andy Morse, and Bill Pelham for your generous contributions to the podcast's Patreon. If you ever need any more information on what the Patreon system is or how you can contribute outside of the Patreon, please reach out to the podcast or Nate himself. If you would like to contribute to the podcast for free, consider sharing any podcasts or the podcast page on Facebook itself. Also, leaving a review and a rating if you listen through iTunes. It helps others find the podcast. Thank you for listening, and we'll be back soon with another episode of the Cue It Up podcast.